Hi, I'm Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like...
a la major.
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show.
What is up, Babelito?
Nothing. I'm just very happy right now.
Because why?
Because I have two of my best friends in the same room. Oh, God.
All right. Today, we have a special guest here. Our very good friend, Madalena, is in the house.
Hey, guys.
Oh, my gosh. And she brought us a feast.
You were waiting to say that.
It just came to me.
That was good.
Okay, you got to tell us, Madalena, what did you bring us today?
So I wanted to bring a sampling of some Colorado Chicano food, which is a little bit different from what I'm used to in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And it is this smorgasbord of craziness, including crispy tacos. Tamales. Oh, and this is from, shout out at the Tamale Kitchen, which is over by Sloan's Lake in Denver. We've got crispy chili rellenos, which is a thing here, apparently.
Gross.
Chili rellenos wrapped in egg roll wrappers.
Let's just take a second and go through this because, so you two are very familiar. Where are you from, Madalena, first
of
all?
I am from the Burque in Nuevo Mexico. I am from Albuquerque, as Babelito likes to say.
So you and Babelito know each other from when he went to
grad school.
Grad school. Okay.
Yes. At the University of Nuevo Mexico.
Okay, yes. So you are a go-to New Mexico expert.
I try to be. I was, and now I find myself here in Colorado.
And what brought you to Colorado?
My family. Well, sort of my family. So my now husband was here. And we found we were going to have a little one.
Okay.
And so I decided to move here, which was actually something I had thought about.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't necessarily expect that I would have relocated my life to Denver necessarily, but it's been good to us.
Yeah. And this restaurant has been good to us today because you... I'm going to just go one by one. The rice and beans...
It is overwhelming.
On point.
That's right.
Because
The rice is salatillo, but it's good.
They fried the
it's
rice a little
good.
Bit. You know how they toasted a little bit before? I can tell they did that. Okay, we got locally made tortillas. Okay, and then...
De harina.
And then you were mentioning it's a chile relleno... crispy.
Yeah, so in Colorado, you go, can I get the chile rellenos, please? And they're like, crispy or soft? And I'm like, ¿cómo? What is that?
I would get mad if I heard that. I'm glad you warned me because I would have been mad. I would have been like,
I finally, after I've lived here almost 7 years, and finally I worked up the courage to ask him what the hell a crispy chile relleno was. And so apparently they wrap it in like wonton wrappers.
Yeah, and it's almost like a buñuelo wrapped around. It's almost good.
It makes me angry.
I know.
That's how bad it is.
I don't even want to look at that.
But I had to bring it because I was like, this is something that we've got to discuss.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Then you brought us hamburger style burritos, right? And they're smothered.
They're Mexican hamburger
burritos. We're going to skip over that one. Then you brought us chile relleno burritos, which I love.
That's one of my personal favorites.
And
that's
a very Juarez thing.
Juarez loves their burritos, huh?
No, but the chile relleno burritos, like, I've never seen it anywhere else.
In Albuquerque, for sure. No, I see it all over New Mexico, and it's one of my favorite burritos, so I had to try theirs.
This one is pretty good. Yeah,
if you get the soft rellenos, then apparently it works out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, then you got the tacos, and it's like they're very Americanized tacos, and they gave you both, like the crispy shell and the soft, and the regular tortilla fried.
Corn tortilla fried.
Yeah. They're good. I mean, they're what they are. but they're seasoned correctly.
Yeah, they were tasty for being those kinds of regular tacos, and then, American tacos.
And then finally, los tamales. Pablito, what'd you think of los tamales?
The tamales were very good. It doesn't have like the meat in the middle. Like it's actually mixed onto the masa, and they're juicy.
What makes a good tamal for you?
A good tamal will be the masa not too dry, but not too wet. Yep. Yes, but I mean, there's different regions. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, yes. There are places in Mexico, right, where there's like super dry masa.
I don't get that. Yeah, and then also you need to have enough meat, but not too much meat to Dios mío, la sed. To undo the ratio of the two ingredients. So this was pretty good. Yes.
Tamales, I see a lot of places that make tamales that are too big.
When you can compare your tamal to the size of your shoe, it's not gonna be good. It's not.
Yeah. And then it's not the last thing. And then you brought us a big bowl of like Colorado style.
Green chili,
which is not, orange.
Yeah.
What?
I had to bring this because this thing, it confuses me still.
It's good.
It is good. It is good. And you know what? There's actually a really wonderful article that Gustavo Arellano wrote, and he's the author of Ask a Mexican, and he's all about Chicano food culture, Mexican-American food culture. But he wrote this great article specifically about Colorado food, Colorado Mexican food, and he talks a lot about the chili. And it's tasty, but there's been like a lot of fiasco lately about like comparing it to New Mexico style green chili, which is totally different.
This is almost like a combination of both of red and green chili.
It's orange, but I don't taste the red chili in it. What's weird is that it's orange, and I don't know why there's pork in it. And it reminds me as a New Mexican of something similar to green chili stew.
Yeah. Yes. But it's very interesting because this type of food goes to show you that you cannot box us, right? You cannot box identities because this is Mexican, New Mexican, Colorado food. That's what it is. Like, you will never see that. But yet, there's aspects of this that you will see in Juarez.
Yep.
You will never see that in Central Mexico. But there's things about it that you will see in Central Mexico.
For example, the rice from here was super homey. But that green chili is something so unique to this area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into it. Let's
do
get
it.
Into it. So I'm very interested in this New Mexico identity. I feel like the Chicano identity in New Mexico is so different than in, let's say, Los Angeles, right? Or Las Vegas.
It is.
When I went there recently, I was there in the summertime. I hung out in Albuquerque for a few days. Shout out to Hi Mija. And then I was over in Santa Fe. And that was very different.
Very, very
so,
different. Con los Santa.
So,
Nope. I'm not going to say it. Hallelujah, amen.
So, maybe we can start with the food. Like, start talking about the food and then get into the whole Chicano identity there.
God, it's so interesting. And I've thought a lot about this as a New Mexican. So I'll just start I don't want to start necessarily with me. We're supposed to start with the food, but this is my perspective. It's a little bit different, right? Because I'm from Albuquerque. My mom was born in Albuquerque and raised in Albuquerque. My grandparents came from Silver City, and all their family was from Juarez, El Paso, Las Cruces area. So we're border people. And so we always thought of ourselves as Mexican American. Well, when you go from Albuquerque or anywhere north, all the Chicanos there really consider themselves to be Spanish, right?
Oh.
Because they've been there for hundreds of years. And even for New Mexicans, my family who, you know, my great-grandparents came from Mexico, like, that's too recent for New Mexicans, you know? So it's really interesting. So I've had this kind of, like, I grew up with all these Spanish Americans, right? But I was considering myself Mexican American. So the food is also really interesting because there's also, like, that also goes to show this larger picture of there's a lot of animosity between northern New Mexico and southern New Mexico.
And Albuquerque, it's two different worlds.
It's completely. Two different worlds. And Albuquerque is kind of the meeting ground, right? Of north and south. It's right in the middle. And there's a lot of people that come from the southern New Mexico and a lot of people that come from northern New Mexico. And northern New Mexico is all these super old pueblos. And you can even count southern Colorado in that too. And that's actually where my dad's family came from. Shout out to my new, not new niece, but my niece Andrea Salazar, who I just met this year. I didn't know my dad's family, but they're all from the San Luis Valley, which is in Colorado, but spans New Mexico. And so there's these people that have been here for hundreds of years. Yeah. And even though they came from Mexico, they really see themselves as more connected to the Spanish.
Right. Because they have a direct descendant.
Right.
From the Spanish colonizers.
Well, basically, they were given these land grants, right? From the Spanish government.
Like, Hispanic identity in New Mexico is super complex and super... It's very interesting, but I had
shout out to Dr. Seth Long.
I had an experience. I don't know if we talked about this in another episode, but I'm going to do it because I don't remember.
Okay.
I went to present in symposium in New Mexico. I don't know if I told you this.
a little bit.
It was about the Inquisition crypto Jews in New Mexico. And I presented about autos de fe, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to get into my presentation. But one of the things I noticed is that there are societies in Santa Fe that are dedicated to trace those lineages all through the blood. Like, they go all the way to the genetics. So they had doctors, they had historians, they had art historians in this conference, and everything to trace this, their Jewishness. And it's almost like those commercials that you see in what is that website?
Ancestry.com.
Oh my God, that's such bullshit. Like, that they show a lady from New Mexico where she's like, I find out that I'm 26% Native American, so therefore I'm making pottery. It's have you seen this commercial? Yeah. No. Of Ancestry.com. And that's how I felt in Santa Fe. People will come to me and be like, oh, where are you from? I said, from Chihuahua. What's your last name? Ortega. Oh, so the Ortega's from Chihuahua. I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, there's millions and millions of people. And I don't give a shit either, right? But it's a really important thing in Santa Fe. And they grab themselves onto something. It could be the Jewishness. It could be the Hispanoness. It could be something. But it's about proving whiteness, which was a little bit scary for me. And I even talked to other historians and I was like, is it me or this is a little bit dangerous? And they're like, oh my God, I'm glad you said something. And we all started talking about
it. It's true, but there's threads of it throughout. It's a lot of really interesting
things. It exists. You cannot deny it.
Part of it has to do with the Inquisition, right? That you were talking about in the symposium.
Yeah.
Part of it has to do with, you know, this pureza de sangre, which you've talked about, I think, on the show as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is coming out of like a post-Reconquista Spain, right? So they're already coming here having to prove themselves that they're not Jewish or not Moro, right? So those are the people that end up settling New Mexico.
Correct.
But then you have New Mexico, this highly mestizo place, right? That all of a sudden after the Mexican-American War finds itself being part of the United States. And that identity,
that's like
another whole different it's this thing. Whole other layer. And in order to kind of have you know, like, political say in the place where, you know, these people, many of them were elites in their region, or, you know, they had some sort of political power. And in order to maintain that, you have to start kind of putting yourself on the same playing field as these Americanos, many of whom were kind of like, you know, for a lack of better words, poor white trash, and coming in to be the governors and, you know, start taking lands from them. And so it was kind of like this collision too of cultures between this like manifest destiny United States.
I guess my problem, it's this idea of purity.
Sure.
Because that's something that I don't know if it exists, and if it does, it doesn't matter to me, right?
But here's the other weird thing, too, is you talk about, even to a lot of Norteños, like a lot of northern New Mexicans, and it's super weird because they're like, oh, I'm Spanish. My family's been here for 600 years. And you start digging down a little bit deeper, and they're like, yeah, well, my cousins live on Taos Pueblo, and like, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, so you're already admitting that, like, you know, your family's indigenous, and... Yeah. You had some part of your family that were, I don't know, Irish settlers or whatever. So you're already, you know, your own identity, you can see, is a lot more complex than this. So you're not really just Spanish.
Exactly. And that's what I think differentiates Chicano identity in New Mexico versus, I don't know, like even Nevada, which the sense, that sense of history that we're talking about in New Mexico, I don't know, like I don't feel like we grew up with that in Las Vegas. It's so different.
No, I mean, I feel like in Las Vegas, it was more like I'm Mexican.
Yeah.
I didn't start identifying. Well, people started to tell me that I was a Chicano later in life. Like I never identified as a Chicano, first of all, because I'm half Guatemalan, but also because I'm first generation. Like a Chicano is like somebody that's been here for a while, second, third generation, right? So, but now, you know, everybody's Chicano on Instagram. They're all lucas and chingoneras or whatever the fuck.
Which I have, I mean, I think this is, yeah, we're gonna get into it too.
We are doing it.
We are. And you know, I think that's also, okay, so I don't know where we want to go with this, but yeah, yeah, it's super interesting. And like the thing is.
Wait. Okay, so let me set it up a little bit. So one of the things that Favi's talking about is how we all of a sudden started noticing ourselves, that everybody's identifying themselves as brujos and brujas, especially in social media. For us, it's something new. So when I mention it to Madalena, Madalena is like, no, this is nothing new in the Chicano community. Mm. So enlighten us, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have noticed this for so long that it wasn't even something that stuck out to me, right? Like, I was just kind of like,
But what does it mean? Like, I don't understand it.
I don't know that I can necessarily define it for everybody who kind of sees themselves in this way, right? But I can kind of explain it from my perspective. And I started to think even more about your kind of antipathy for this as well. And I think a lot of it even has to do with like chicanisma, like for mujeres, right? Mm-hmm. And that's even kind of reclaiming a brown feminism as well.
But witchcraft have to do with...
I think it...
I'm asking, no tea, no shade.
No,
I'm just...
no, totally. And I think using that specific term is something new. But I think from the time of the movement, and even I think as you look at our history in this country or elsewhere, you know, we're a very holistic people. We our perspectives are a lot more whole than I think a lot of Northern European kind of people who like have, you know, you're this, you're that, this is this, this is medicine, this is art, this is everything is correct, very delineated, right? I think we already have this kind of much more holistic perspective about the world. And some of that has to do with how we treat ourselves, I think, in terms of healing. And so I think a lot of it has to do with actual like indigenous practices, some of which were constantly practiced.
And some of them were invented.
And some of them were invented, absolutely. Like a lot of them are people who are trying to reclaim that indigeneity, which is, you know, a really huge part of being a Chicano, is really, you know, emphasizing that indigenous aspect of your mestizaje as opposed to that Spanish part.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's understandable. That has been suppressed, that has been oppressed, and that's important. And for a lot of us, that like brujería was always part of our culture, but for a lot of us, it's made up, right? Like it's an identifier. But I think for a lot of women though too, it's kind of important because that's helping us reclaim a lot of our Chicana femininity.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a self-care movement that's happening online. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's, and you know, it always, I don't want to say it always starts with Black people, but you know, everybody, the culture here in the United States, popular
black
culture,
magic,
like Black girl magic started. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So now we're embracing our, our brujanes, right? In the Latino community, Chicano community, Hispanic, depending on how you want to identify, right?
Amen.
So are you a Republican? So, I just am like thinking from like a real brujas perspective, like what do they think about all these people claiming to be brujas?
It's just, like, it's like what Madalena was saying, this idea of reclaiming indigenous practices. But to what extent do we know what those practices are when we know that a lot of that epistemology was completely destroyed? So to me, the first step, I think it is to highlight that that's what happened. Like, a lot of this shit was completely eliminated before we start making this shit up and exoticizing ourselves. This is where I
have a real tension in me being a Chicana, because and here I am like wagging my finger at you, but it's really hard because, you know, I think it goes too far. It's super academic of you to also say like all of these Native practices were, you know,
I'm not saying they were completely removed, right, or gone. That's not what I'm saying. But I feel like we don't understand to what extent and how they existed. And it's very easy for us, for identity ideas, to just reclaim certain aspects, sure, make them sexy, and sure, putting
like
them
put
there
on a huipil, and you know, that's showcasing, correct, your, you know, Chicano identity. And there is a problem in that. I often wonder, like, as Chicanos, like, are we culturally appropriating our
own
ancestors,
yes,
our own culture, mm-hmm, like our indigenous?
That's my question.
You know, brothers and sisters, yeah, in our communities, and what does that do to the people that actually are part of these indigenous communities? Yeah. But at the same time, like, as mestizo people, like, a lot of these practices did not go away, and you see that very clearly in New Mexico.
Yes, correct.
Like, yeah, you see that we've been gathering herbs and performing limpias, and mm-hmm, you know, there's so many things that have been part of this culture, and it just, you know, I think in certain instances, this is kind of like coming to the light for a lot of people. And then for other people, it's actually like they had no, yeah, idea that this was a thing. And now with this sort of like self-care movement, mm-hmm, that's something that they're like, oh, yeah, like I'm going to take that and use it.
I see that as a sign of us not hiding anymore, because I feel like I mean, I've known you for a year or two now. And we haven't talked about curanderos or brujas or any of that, but I know you have stories. I have stories,
right,
personal experiences,
sure, exactly,
with you know, alguien que me, you know, like una sobadora in Mexico when I fell out. You know, like there's always alternative medicine,
right,
alternative practice,
correct,
and then like just our perspectives. And I guess that's, yeah, what I was kind of trying to get at the beginning.
In all of our stories. So now I'm seeing it in a different way. Now it's us, like, okay, we don't have to assimilate anymore. Like, we're embracing our differences, right, and we're talking about, mm-hmm, these magical,
right,
practices that we all are familiar with,
totally,
but we don't really talk about
and
it.
So,
it's just,
and
I think the problem that I have more than anything, it's the packaging of it. Packaging of all these things, because it's another form of exoticization when we don't, to me, we don't have enough information to truly understand it. We can talk about things, we can embrace certain aspects, and there's things that are part of our lives, like we're fucking eating tortillas, right? Like, there's so many things that there are ingrained in who we are as Mexicanos, as Chicanos, as Latinos, et cetera, et cetera. But for me to push it to call myself a brujo or a curandero, to me, that's creating more difference, one, and two, it's a little bit irresponsible. However, maybe there's people that are brujos and brujas, and I just simply do not have enough information. But the packaging that I'm getting in social media, that's where a red light is coming for me, and I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that you're speaking to that is pretty problematic is this sort of sense of magic, right? Making us these unicorns, making us these magical creatures. I think there's something important to be said about us as people of color in general, considering ourselves and our culture and our identities to be magical because we are survivors. But that said, and there's, you know, so much rich inherently in our cultures, but that said, you know, that magic piece of it, being a brujo,
yeah,
or being magic, that exoticizes us. And it goes to like my hatred for the term magical realism in literature, because
don't get me started.
Fuck, seriously, yes. that's not we're not magic. Like, that's how we perceive the world.
Yes.
It's not something
We've
bizarre,
talked about this
you know?
Yeah. Totally.
And it's the same thing. And I think that's the difference. It's like, where we want to know where these people are coming from. Are they trying to say, this is who we always are, and this is, you know, let's start looking at the world in a different light and stop kind of oppressing this indigenous mestizo, you know, holistic viewpoint that has always been part of our culture?
Yeah.
Or is it like, oh, this is cool, we're going to like, you know, put on neon feathers and go run around Coachella or whatever.
And to, She said it. But it's but that's very interesting, the whole thing with magic and realism, because that's the way that the Europe loves to label right. the Americas for fucking centuries. It's a magical place. It's a violent place. It's this and that. So for us to do that today, you know, again, it's not about the practices. It's not about our heritage. It's about the packaging that really, really bugs me. And again, we said it before with the Tamarindo podcast. Are we doing the same thing that the oppressor was doing to us? And how are we changing things like that? I'm posing the question. I'm not trying to like be the word of anything, but like we really have to start thinking about these things.
True. Yeah.
So,
and I don't purport to have the answers. It's something that I think about a lot. But yeah, I mean, I see this as part of a continuum of Chicano identity. Maybe it's like a second wave. I don't know what wave we're in. Third, second, third wave of Chicanismo, whatever. But yeah, I think it's something that it behooves us to be critical about for sure.
Go ahead.
I'm learning so much. This is wonderful. I don't have anything to say.
I think the first thing I started thinking about this was in grad school when it came to our attention, this idea about the Aztec identity, right? When it comes down to the Aztecs, it's like this imperialist, like this imperialist people that were conquering everybody around. The Chicano movement in the 60s chooses that image because of the connections with Aztlán, which I completely understand in that those historical aspects. But again, to what extent are we exoticizing ourselves? Well, we don't know necessarily much. Are we attaching ourselves to another empire when we're trying to go against the empire rules?
Right.
It's just things that we need to think more deeply instead of just being like, like you say, feathers.
And that's something that's super interesting too, living in Colorado, because, you know, my family had a lot of reservations of me moving here, but you know, I think as New Mexicans in general and Coloradans too, like Chicanos in Colorado see a lot of linkage, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the people that are here have roots in New Mexico, especially Northern New Mexico, but it's so different that, just kind of the history of racism in this state, as opposed to the way it manifested in New Mexico, just because of the populations of how many, whatever you want to call them, Latino, Hispano, Indo, Hispano, whatever New Mexicans there were, and the lack thereof in Colorado, like there was a lot more, you know, Chicano pride during the movement. And even today here that I don't see in New Mexico, there is a lot of that. You know, there's a lot more unity. There's a lot more of this like sense of mestizaje or indigeneity that you do not see. And it manifests in the arts too.
Mm. Do you think that your identity has changed being in Denver? Do people see you differently here, or do you feel like I'm just interested in knowing depending on what region you move to?
It makes a difference because I think, you know, my parents spent a lot of time in LA during the 70s, mm-hmm. and you know, one was from Southern Colorado and one was from New Mexico, and hearing their stories. Yeah, the identity is different. I spent time in Brooklyn, and that's a very different kind of like more pan-Latino kind of experience.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I fit very strangely in New Mexico because I grew up in a family that, you know, was like, we're Mexican-American and we're proud of being Mexican-American. They told us of like the conquista and our history and like our ancestors that were, you know, the people of Mexico that were like these amazing indigenous cultures. And, you know, in New Mexico, it's just like Spain, Spain, Spain. So I felt always a little different from that until I met mm-hmm. Babelito, because, you know, growing up, it was like, I felt like I either had to be like this Spanish person or I had to be a Chola. And I wasn't
to me, she was just Mexican. When I met her, I was like, yeah, I have a Mexican friend in New Mexico.
Right, and it was only when I was older and I started to meet these young Mexicanos that, you know, had maybe been a little bit more back and forth along the border and had that more kind of like Mexican, but weren't like, you know, ranchero or whatever, but like maybe more alternative Mexicanos, mm-hmm. that I started to feel a little bit more like myself. People that were interested in some of the same things, because I wasn't like, you know, wearing my Dickies or anything and with big hair, you know, like there was some of that culture that was absolutely fascinating to me as a New Mexican, but you know, it was very frowned upon in my family. Just like my mom calling herself Chicana during the movement was very frowned upon in my family. But it was also super frowned upon in my family to denounce our Mexicanness and to say that we were Spanish.
Interesting.
But being in Colorado, yeah, I actually feel a little bit better about it because the Chicanos here are proud to be Chicano. Oh, and they say they're Mexican-American.
Yeah.
They say they're Mexican-American. Even though they say, oh, I'm Mexican-American, my family comes from northern New Mexico. Well, I bet you their family in northern New Mexico calls themselves Spanish.
Ah, yeah. That sums it up. Yes.
But here it feels a little bit better. It's kind of sad, though, too, because there's also like this new Mexicano population, and it feels very separated from the rest of... I mean, the Chicano culture itself feels separated from the rest of Colorado culture, and people forget that there is this historical presence of Latinos in this state that goes back hundreds of years. I don't think they forget. Some people forget, and some people are intentionally erasing it.
Even though their state is called Colorado.
Colorado.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, man, let's not even talk about the pronunciations of things here.
Can you please pronounce a few?
Oh, okay. Just so, you know what?
And then you do Nevada with
A street that's really close to where we're sitting here right now.
Yeah.
Galapago. How would you say that?
Galapagos.
Right, so it's Galapago.
No!
New York City!
Okay. And actually, so...
That's crazy.
Two streets Galapagos. Down, this gets those of us that are New Mexicans. Galapagos. Because there's all the pueblos, right? So there's the street down the street is Acoma.
Acoma.
And there's Zunai.
Zunai instead of Zuni?
Yeah.
That's an easy one, too.
Galapagos, man. Isn't that a Darwin thing?
Yeah, like the Galapagos Islands off of Ecuador.
White supremacy, it fits right in. Why don't they say Galapagos?
No, it's Galapago.
Like in Austin, instead of Guadalupe Street, it's Guadalupe.
Guadalupe, yeah.
It sounds like yogurt that you put in a tube.
But ooh, you know what? For a lot of burqueños, like even though we say a lot of things correctly, a lot of burqueños still say Candelaria Street.
I mean, that's fine.
San Pedro and...
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's all be real. All of us say Alameda. Like, all of us Alameda. In Albuquerque, all of us in Denver, and probably all the people that live in California, too.
Oh my God, I just remember one
or
word.
Or most of them.
That, because I've been in grad school, you know, it's working. Yeah. I've been in grad school way too long, but now I moved back to Wright in New Mexico. Now I live with Madalena's mom. Shout out to La Judy.
La Judy.
She's gonna love this. I can't wait to she listens. But they use this term called pobrecita, not pobrecita, but pobrecita without pronouncing the B. Mm-hmm. And I noticed how they use it. We were talking about your niece, Aurelia. She goes, oh, she loved that apple so much. Ay, pobrecita. And I was like, why pobrecita? Like, she loved her apple. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, pobrecita without a B is like, bless your heart.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, that's ay, pobrecita. Very... Like, oh, se acaba de casar. Ay, pobrecita.
So funny.
But I couldn't understand it because she kept saying that. Oh, she's so happy. Ay, pobrecita. I'm like, why? Like, you don't like her or what? But that's one of those words, but it's without the B.
Yep.
Oh, my God. It's to me, that shit is fascinating.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. And then there's the New Mexican language and accent, which is all a whole other thing that people love to go on and on and
but
on
you know,
and on about.
I have a friend in my dissertation writing group who studies the way that language, like Spanish, has developed in northern New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And the rules that she has... scene and the patterns are very similar to small towns in Chihuahua.
Interesting.
So it's like a non-urban,
right?
Northern Mexico or northern New Spain sort of development, not necessarily just from New Mexico.
The more that you know about rural or northern parts of Mexico, mm-hmm. this sort of exceptionalism of New Mexico is being this like weird kind of isolated place starts to disappear. I mean, it is different and there's a lot of unique things about it, but you see certain similar things happening across Mexico, things that are connected I mean, for God's sakes, there were trade routes between indigenous people from central Mexico and southern, what is now southern Colorado, for thousands of years. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's problematic in it of itself to see it as a sort of, it's always understood. I remember being taught in school that New Mexico was like an island. This was like in second, third grade or whatever. New Mexico was like an island and it was remote and people didn't go there. And so like the culture is absolutely different. And, but like, it's the same myth that you can even see happening in relation to the United States when you look at Puerto Rico, like Isla de Encanto and Encanta.
And the land of enchantment.
Tierra Encantada.
Interesting.
Oh, speaking of that, let's talk about how Santa Fe is a lie. And that I was there like 2 days and I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like all these adobe structures over there. Wow, this neighborhood must be so old. And then one of the people I was with was like, oh no, that's a Fodobe house. I'm like, Fodobe? What are you talking about?
New York City.
I was like, what? They're like, yeah, that's a stucco. Like all the houses here are made to look like those adobe indigenous structures. Yeah. To give it a look, and then I guess in the early part of the century, they like the city planned it that way so that it would be this enchanting place where people could. It was like a Disney-fied version.
Uh-huh. Once again, magic.
New Mexico. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And this is what I talk about is that New Mexican identity in relation to this manifest destiny understanding of like these Americans coming into this place.
Yes.
And it is, and that's true. And you see that in the arts. Like I was just thinking when I was getting food, there were all these pictures of Chicano artists from Denver on the walls, and they're all like Serapis and like the Mexican muralist movement super influenced the Chicano artists in Denver.
Correct.
But in New Mexico, like you don't really see that so much. What you see are like all this like this resurgent of santeros and santero art, and so it's really this is this complexity about like identity.
The sculptures of the saints.
Oh, made out of wood.
Yes.
And it's super interesting and confusing and conflicting because, you know, there was this history of that being the art, that being the culture, just like Santa Fe originally did look like that with, you know, the Palace of the Governors is the way it is and the plaza and everything. But
even back then, there were like so little, like few structures. Right. It's so, so different.
But then, you know, as the Santa Fe Trail opened, like more... you know, modern goods started coming into the state and culture started changing. And that is also what brought a lot of Americans into the state. And they, especially artists, this is the really interesting thing too, is that it was the artists and the arts community that like saw this as a real detriment. They were like, oh, all these artists, they're like, you know, taking down their bultos and retablos in the churches and putting up like these plaster of Paris Catholic sculptures. And like, this is awful. And like, we have to save the art.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all these, it was these Americans, primarily artists that came and started to so-called like save New Mexican culture. And they put into effect like all of this city planning in Santa Fe that you can't tear down these historic structures, that new structures have to look like they comport with older structures.
Yeah, there's no neon allowed on buildings because they want the sky to remain.
And, you know, like, there's a lot of benefits for that. I mean, there's a lot of things that have continued on that have, you know, that have become really characteristic of New Mexico. The arts as a center of, like, culture. The arts are just, like, really inherent in New Mexican life. Oh, and
my God, speaking of that, I remember Madalena's mom used to be the director for a couple years of the New Mexico State Fair. So she hired me as a director of the Hispanic Arts Wing because it's like an expo, like a world's expo. You have Native American art here, Hispanic art here, and then fine art where all the white artists people, exhibited, right?
And it's the tricultural state.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And I was like, like I'm going to show all these kids, bring your skateboards that are painted. Like I wasn't going to do the typical Hispano thing. Holy shit.
What?
We received death threats. People were mad at me. People at the opening day were taking their art out of the walls and they were yelling at me because I was ruining the whole entire heritage, or I don't know. Like, it was weirdest, craziest experience of my life. That summer made me see things in a completely different way.
So that's where it all changed.
Yes, I think it all started there, because I was just like, no, like, let's have new artists, new talent. If you want to do, I don't know, like an abstract painting, like, why not? Just because you're Latino, you're not supposed to do abstract art. You can do whatever you want. So in the first room of the gallery, I filled it out with abstract shit. And then I put like the landscapes of the pueblos, like hitting in a corner. So I reversed it from the years before. Oh my God, big mistake. So never came back. No. Oh, it's so interesting. New Mexico identity, it's its own world.
Yeah.
So I want to go back again and talk about you and Madalena's relationship. You guys met in school.
Yes. Actually, Madalena gave me my first tour of UNM. So the very first person I met in New Mexico was Madalena. And then, because I wasn't planning to go into grad school, I just applied and then I got accepted. And
you're,
I was like,
let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I just drove there. And by the end of that trip, my advisor was like, yeah, so welcome to New Mexico. I'm like, But thank God I moved 2 blocks from her house. It just happened to happen like that. And we spent like a whole year hanging out all the fucking time. Yep. One of the first things we did was to go to Vegas to Vegas. Remember that music festival?
Vegas.
Yeah, we saw Daft Punk there. Yeah, oh, we had so much fun. We went to Coachella twice.
And Public Enemy and Iggy Pop.
Yes. Oh my God. MIA.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. And then we went to see, we saw a lot of shows also in New Mexico. But it was like a crazy, fast, intense year where like every single day, our favorite phrase was, me too. Yes, me too.
But like, the crazy thing was, it was like we were meeting our twin. Like, it was insane. Yeah,
it was crazy. Aww. And
like,
then,
never had this experience.
Yeah,
ever.
Me neither. It was like my more female me. I was gonna say my female me, but you know, it's more.
I love this idea that I've been, a lot of podcasts have been talking about it, is like friend soulmates. Mm-hmm. Like, that shit's real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I see it right here. There's a glow. There's a glow.
just staring at each other.
Yeah. Well, you guys.
Yeah.
Like those mirror movements.
Best buddies. Yeah.
Aww. No, but it really felt like that. And it was a blessing, because my career has always been a series of like, okay, I guess I'll do that. And New Mexico was I was about to be woke. And it was taking, like, it took like 4 years.
One of the first things he said to me, oh, I cannot God, get it out go. Of my hand. I bring it up all the time now. Because like,
say
seeing,
it, say
cause
it.
Seeing that him on
everybody,
this podcast,
that was a long time ago.
Calmate. Que termine, que termine.
I don't think I've ever experienced racism. And literally, like, 24 hours later, we're walking across the street. And it was summer. It was summertime. We were stopped at a crosswalk.
This happened
and
right
we were
at the same
speaking time. Spanish. It was literally, like, the next day. We were speaking Spanish. And, of course, we're, like, all excited. So we're, like, giggling and being all loud. And this dude in a car with his window down, he's like, fucking Mexicans, go home!
Yeah.
And I was like, see?
I've never experienced racism.
I was
go
so,
back to where you came from. Oh, that's
I
awesome.
Was so dumb. Oh my God!
He, like,
thank
cried
God
all
for
afternoon.
Thank God for grad school. Yes,
God
yes,
for
yes,
me
yes,
growing
yes.
up in the hood, I knew racism was real. Very early age.
Oh my God!
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
And now he's a host of Latinos Who Lunch.
Man,
fíjate. Take a look at
oh man, I need to. After that, I gotta go use the bathroom. That was too much. Let's take a little break, and we'll be right back. We're back.
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
I knew she was going to out me. But that's
it's
good.
It's such a good story. It's how important, could you not?
It's important for people to know that we all have our own journeys.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. I used to like the Black Eyed Peas. So.
I mean, you're not born woke, right? Like.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's so funny.
Well, I think it's time for recommendations.
Yes.
I'm going to start because I...
No, let our guest start.
Adios mio.
No. This is very serious. Me and my friend Michaela. Michaela from episode 3 of the Beyonce episode.
Shout out Michaela that is right behind us.
She's actually in the room right now. But, we have been obsessed with watching... like Scientology documentaries.
Oh my god.
So we saw a mess.
So freaky.
We saw the Going Clear documentary, the HBO one.
I read the book. It was the scariest shit I have ever read in my whole life.
Isn't it fascinating?
Yes.
It's amazing.
This bitch but had nightmares about, like, with that documentary.
Oh my god, yes.
It was L. Ron Hubbard.
I read the book that it was based on.
Just like
on.
Chomping like, at me like, oh. Like, oh my gosh.
But also, like, yeah, I had to, like, stop reading the book for, like, weeks at a time to go back to it.
Isn't it? Okay, and now, listen to this. Leah Remini has a show on A&E. Comes out every Tuesday. And it's awesome. She's just, like, going through and just outing the church. And
she's a shit.
She's been my girl from jump, but like, yeah. But I was
from
always
King of Queens.
Yes,
no, what King was it Queens. That she was
nah,
in before?
Saved by the Bell.
Yes.
The college years.
Yes, that was so good.
Yeah, Saved by the Bell. So, I love her so much. Even though she did do that whole Chola thing for Halloween, but we all have our problematic faves. But
we'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
I can't wait to watch this. Keep watching this show on A&E because I think it's like a full season.
But also her reality show, it's funny. They don't do shit. They're just sitting there and you're like laughing out loud. The mom, the dad, everybody in that show, it's hilarious. So
yeah.
Yes, like everything
about
her.
Shout out to Leah Remini. And
shout out.
When you want to be, you can be a guest on Latinos Who Lunch whenever you honorary Latina. Just come on over.
I don't know. I'm trying to say.
Leah Remini. It's like all those like Italian people that are like,
is she Italian?
Well, if you call yourselves Latinos, then I guess I'm Latino because I'm Italian. So, you know, there is already a connection.
Benvenuta.
Yes. Madalena, what's your recommendation?
Oh man, my recommendations are funny because I like am half engaged with all of these things. Okay, so I've got a couple of books actually. Well, I'll give you three because I've like read these and I'm like dying to finish them all. And I kind of have like a short attention span for books. I haven't finished this, but like it connects with this episode so well. And it's such a great exploration of Mexican American identity through food. And it's Gustavo Arellanos of Ask a Mexican fame. Shout out to Ask a Mexican.
Yes.
Shout out.
And it is his Taco USA. It's an older book, but it is so good. And I'm shocked that you guys haven't read it yet, considering that this is all about food and Latinos.
I know. I read the book Taco Planet and Tacopedia, but this one's on my list.
And
to read
I like Gustavo Arellano because he has this beef with Rick Bayless.
Oh, nice.
Oh, and every time he complains about Rick, oh, it's so good. Like, it's so good.
Love.
Gracias.
Yes. This other book is incredibly fascinating. It's called Debt. The First 5,000 Years by David Graeber. And it talks about kind of just human history in terms of economics. But instead of like our discovery of capital, it's more about how our history is tied to debt. And it's super interesting. I think there's a lot of tie-ins to like interesting social, you know, public whatever is going on right now, all the craziness that is going on, you can see a lot of these processes happening in this book. It's super interesting. And then the other one is People's Art History of the United States by Nicholas Lampert. And it's like a bunch of different articles about social movements, social justice movements in the United States history and how art has tied into it. And again, all of these I haven't completely finished reading, but I've skipped around and they are amazing and super thought-provoking. So read them. Amazing. Check them out.
The first time a book is being recommended in this podcast.
Oh.
That's awesome. Yeah. Wow.
That's kind of
well,
sad.
Well, I recommend the Bible. it's, you know.
El Popol Vuh. So with that trend in mind, I'm going to recommend a book too, because we were talking about New Mexico identity.
And because we've got our Santa freaking Fe. Mind meld.
No, it just reminded me of the symposium and what we're talking about. It's a book by Francis Levine. The title is Doña Teresa Confronts the Spanish Inquisition. It's the life of the Spanish lady that arrives to Santa Fe, and she hates it. She hates it. So it's how she lived there. And then in this exhibition, the New Mexico History Museum, I don't think it's up anymore, they have pieces that she carried with her, including her whole chocolate set. She couldn't travel anywhere without her. You saw the
I
exhibition.
Saw that show.
Yes.
It was this year.
Yeah.
So oh, Frances cool. Lavigne, with all the documents that they found on the of the palace of the governors, she put together her life, but also how life really was in the palace of the governors. So it really gives you this idea of how crazy and interesting colonial life was within Santa Fe, which has nothing to do with this like magic frontier Disneylandia that we see now when you go visit Santa Fe. So again, it's Doña Teresa Confronts the Spanish Inquisition, a 17th century New Mexican drama.
Ooh.
By Frances Levine. So
Escándalo. I can't even say
it. Escándalo de pulseras.
There it is. There it is.
So before we go, I want you to tell us a little bit more about, because you mentioned this book and art and social justice. So I want to know a little bit more about your practice and tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So find more about me and my work at thirdspacevision.com. That's with a number 3, RD vision space. .com. So I went to graduate school. My master's is in art history. I went to graduate school with Babalito.
Hey.
As he knows, I then transitioned into museum work.
Correct.
As a museum educator. But
Madalena's a badass. She took an internship at the Brooklyn Art Museum, and she also held the first. Tell us the position you had at the Denver Art Museum.
I was the first Latino Cultural Programs Coordinator at the Denver Art Museum.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, you're always gonna be the first person to hold that title.
It's
that's pretty
amazing.
Exciting.
I mean, and yeah, like no pressure there, right? Like, you know, this Chicana from New Mexico, whatever. That's a whole other story. But it was amazing work that I will never have the pleasure of being able to do again, because it's such a unique position. But I was very, very lucky to have been able to kind of build what that looked like. Since then, I left about a year and a half ago, or almost a year and a half ago, and I've been working freelance. And so I'm really interested in supporting communities that have been sort of overlooked by arts practice. Community arts is really something super important to me, but art and social justice is hugely important to me. Mm-hmm. And also I've been working a lot doing inclusion and equity work with arts organizations. And that's harder, right? Because, I mean, it's harder in a way because there's not always people that want to really kind of put their nose to the ground and do that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be more problematic, more difficult, and you could be seen as,
yes,
you know, a fall person for that in a lot of ways. So I personally like to, you know, utilize art as a tool for social justice movements and community building and personal empowerment. You know, I'd like to see more representation in the arts of people of color. So many things. I mean, there's so many things.
And I'm glad. I really encourage people to go to her website, because these are things that are happening in other cities a lot. And we have a lot of those, them like following Latinos who launch. So I think it's going to be a good opportunity to create a really, what do they call it? Synergistic.
And that's one thing that I could say. You know, I see third space. You know, many of you, you know, are probably familiar with the term, but it's a place where differing things, it's a liminal space where differing things, people come together and build something new. And I think the arts are a place where that happens.
Yes.
It builds understanding, safety. It could build transformative understanding of the world. So I really see the arts as a tool, and the arts in a larger, broader sense than what I think we normally see in the art world, which has always been pretty hierarchical.
And a place to reevaluate what art is and for who, because, because
exactly.
Historically speaking, in the West, well, pretty much around the world now, the market, the white market is the one that has defined what art is and how it's supposed to be beheld.
Right.
So the fact that there's this type of organizations that are trying to create a liminal space and an alternative space to try to say something different and say, no, something doesn't have to be abstract and fancy to be evaluated in a museum, right?
Right.
So, yes. So, say your website one more time.
Thirdspacevision.com.
Awesome. That's www.rdspacevision.com. Thirdspacevision.com.
Bum, 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 bum.
And, you know, along the same line, shout out to su teatro here on Santa Fe.
Yeah, absolutely.
¿Cómo se llama el Museo de las Américas?
Yes.
Like,
two super important. And there's also one that you're not as familiar with. There's the Chicano Humanities and Arts Council. Mm-hmm. Shout out to CHOC. Yeah. All of these organizations really support the Latino community here in Denver and have for, you know, su teatro for 40 years, CHOC for close to 40 years, I think, and Museo just celebrated their 25th anniversary. So these were organizations that came straight out of the Chicano movement here in Denver and understood how important the arts were to having this space of dialogue, to this sense of identity, to rediscovering who we were. And yeah, I can't get enough of those places.
And I want to personally thank you on the podcast, Madalena, because without you, I wouldn't be in the show at the Denver Art Museum currently, because I know it was you, girl. I know it was you that put it in their ear that I existed. So shout out to you.
Thank you.
Because, I from the very beginning when they were planning the Mi Tierra show, they were contacting me because that's when you worked at the museum. So.
It was. And I saw my space there very much as a platform, as a door to be opening for more and more people that needed to be in those spaces. And I see Third Space Vision also in that sense. It's a platform. It's a resource for people of color and allies to, you know, kind of like, let's change what the arts really look like. Change who's making it and change like what their understanding of it is.
Que belleza.
The future is brown.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Madalena. Thank you so much for all this amazing food. Those chile relleno burritos.
The shit.
Thebomb.com.
Crispy chile rellenos, however.
Not so much.
Weird.
We are so excited to.
Dos dedos abajo.
Yeah. We're excited to have you back because I know we want to ask you so much more.
Yes.
And maybe the next one we do can be about museums. Absolutely. And spaces like that and art spaces.
I am ready.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
Yes.
Let's talk about museums next time.
Yes.
All right. This has been Latinos Who Lunch. I'm Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
You can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. We're at Latinos Who Lunch on all social media. And you could also email us directly at latinoswholunch@gmail.com. Bye.
Ciao.